Now, the Israelites have been in the desert for almost 40 years, even more than we've been in the period of lockdown. But I guess there are a lot of parallels, and maybe it's not so hard to imagine the sense of mundanity that must have been settling in, and I suppose the temptation for them to think, well, is God really still with us? He made these promises to Abraham a long time ago. He spoke through Moses, but that was years ago. Is he still with us? Is he still on our side? Can we still believe the promises that he made such a long time ago? So here they are in the plains of Moab. This is the third and the final long-term camp that they had on their journey, slow journey from Egypt, towards the promised land. They were on the edge of the promised land. And maybe they, like us, are longing for a chance to go out, to go into this place that we've been desperate to get back into, or get into, in their case, the first time. But they must have been tempted to doubt God's promises. Would it really happen? And so, interestingly, in the story, as this potentially is what's going on in the camp, we're then transported up into the hills for a story that's quite removed from their experience, involving, unfortunately, two characters who have very similar names. So we'll try and unpack them a bit. We have Balak and we have Balaam. I think later went on and founded a small community in South London, but we don't have time to focus on that right now. We're going to look at those two characters. We're going to have a little sidetrack in a bit of a donkey interlude that we didn't read today, but I would encourage you to read it. And then we're going to think about the third and the, what I would say is the main character in this story. So let's start with Balak. So this is the king of Moab, and he is concerned when best part of 500,000 Israelites move in and start camping outside his province. He's just seen them wipe out the Amorites in the previous chapter, in chapter 21. That's what's happened just before this episode. And he's afraid, and he's also a little bit shrewd, I guess, because he realizes that he doesn't have the physical strength or the military might to beat them. So he thinks, okay, well, what I need is a publicity campaign. I'm going to run what we might call a smear campaign. He's going to try and get a bit of bad publicity, a few curses, undermine their confidence, maybe a bit of trolling on Twitter. He can get the social media activated. The Israelites will lose heart and they'll withdraw. Now, I guess we know just as well today as they did back then that words have power. Words can build up. They can also destroy. And we see this right through the Old Testament and the New Testament, that words can have power to bless and to curse. Remember, Jesus curses a fig tree and immediately it withers. But Balak is used to an environment of many gods, many local deities. And so he thinks that he can buy God's favor. So he does this by entreating a famous seer. So we'll get to Balaam a bit later. But essentially, we saw that in the passage, didn't we? He sends his messengers to this famous holy man and says, come along, put a curse on these people, and then that'll be great, and then maybe we can win them over. And he thinks that if he offers extravagant sacrifices, so notice he offers 7 bulls and 7 rams, so the very best animals in his entire flock, he offers those, so like the top notch, the most luxurious sacrifice that he could give, because, you know, you've got to spend a bit to get a bit, you know. You're going to get the best curses, you've got to spend the most money. Notice as well that he's not easily perturbed. So when he is rebuffed by Balaam the first time, he sends back more princes, more numerous, more distinguished. I don't know how the first princes felt at that point, but they were probably a bit miffed. But so he doesn't give up easily. And I guess that's the kind of world that he was in. There's a world that if you first you don't succeed, you try again. Because all these gods, they're kind of fickle, they're kind of in equal opposition against each other. They're all bubbling along together. And maybe if you put out a bit more here, you can get this God's favor. And then maybe next year you could get another God's favor. It's all about your interaction with them. They're not far away. They're potentially able to be influenced by you. Notice again, so after the second passage, and he's slightly shocked when he asks Balaam to curse Israel and then he blesses them. He says, well, you know, that didn't work the first time. Maybe it was the lighting. Maybe the wind was in the wrong direction. So let's try again. And so he tries 3 times. and three-time Balaam blesses Israel more and more amazingly. So actually, we're going to look at the ass later, but we will learn that there are many fools in this story, and Balak is one of them. He thinks he can buy God's favor. He thinks that truth is relative, that it's easy to manipulate. But actually, what we learn through his experience is that there are absolutes, that there are some things which cannot be moved, which cannot be twisted and distorted and undermined. So now let's think a bit about Balaam, the other main human character in the story. So he is a celebrity seer. He's a big man in the area. And I was fascinated to discover, so in 1967, just in an excavation in Jordan, this fragment that you can see on the right-hand side of your screens was found from about 800 BC. So it's a few hundred years later, but still it's a kind of part of the archaeological evidence. And it talks about Balaam of Beor, a divine seer. So it's a good reminder to us, isn't it, that this is not just a story. This is history. This really happened. This was a real man who was well known in the area. And you might be thinking when we're looking at this story, oh, well, maybe he was a good guy. You know, he seems to do the right thing. He says, well, I can only say what the Lord speaks to me. He says that many times. He appears to wait on a message from the Lord. He appears to deliver them faithfully. And the refrain that comes out all the way through this passage is repeated in chapter 23, verse 12. Must I not speak what the Lord puts into my mouth? And so as a reader, this is the refrain that we come back to again and again and again. Balaam is only able to speak what God tells him. But is he really such a good guy? Well, we do get some hints that actually he's quite the opposite. And remember, it would have been incredibly shocking for the Israelites to imagine that a pagan, that a Gentile, could ever speak on behalf of the Lord. This man practiced divination, so he would cut open animals and, you know, maybe tea leaves, if he had any tea leaves, all sorts of weird and wonderful ways to try and predict the future, to try and predict what would happen. All the sorts of things which are explicitly forbidden in the book of Leviticus as being wicked and evil. And notice there's a few subtle hints in the narration. So he says, oh, well, I can only speak what the Lord tells me. I'm a very important man. I can speak on behalf of any God. But when the narrator talks about God speaking back to him, he uses a different word. He says, God came to Balaam. The Lord speaks to Moses, but God came to Balaam. And Balaam doesn't give prophecies. He gives oracles. So maybe that's not all as clear as we might first think. And I think the donkey also gives us some interesting information about the character of Balaam. So we're not going to read the story, but essentially, while Balaam is on the way to see Balak, he's on his donkey, he's riding along. Suddenly, the donkey gets really anxious, tries to turn away from the road. So Balaam, you know, being the good animal lover he is, whips the donkey to get it going again. And then a second time, the donkey tries to turn away, so he whips it even harder. Third time the donkey tries to turn away, and so he really starts saying, and then suddenly the donkey turns around and says, oi, stop it, what are you doing? Look, and then suddenly it says, the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with his sword drawn. So he bowed low and fell face down. And through this episode, Balaam learns that actually God is not to be trifled with. His word cannot be changed or opposed. And I wonder if Balaam was starting to think, well, maybe, you know, initially God told me not to go with them, but now he's saying I can. So maybe, you know, he's just as fickle and changeable as all the other gods that I've spoken on behalf of. You know, maybe if Balak gives me enough money, maybe I could do this cursing thing after all. Maybe we'll see how it goes. But through this episode with the donkey, he is absolutely put in his place. And it might seem like a comical story. This is a picture from Shrek, kind of comedy where there's a talking donkey. Like, donkeys are funny animals. But I think that's kind of the point. You see, on the one hand, we have this grand vizier, this master soothsayer, celebrity, speaks on behalf of all these great deities. And yet he's completely blind to what's going on right in front of his face. He can't see the spiritual reality. He can't interpret the animal, the actions of an animal, which was kind of his job. He is completely impotent. And yet a donkey, who is still considered to be a slightly laughable and foolish creature, speaks and acts with wisdom. So Balaam is humbled and he goes to the meeting with Balak, entirely convinced that he really can only speak what the Lord tells him. Now, you might think this is a bit fantastical, the idea of God speaking through a donkey, but I'd like to suggest that this isn't the greatest miracle. So for the people of Israel, it would have been completely abhorrent to imagine that God could speak through a wicked, evil, Gentile mystic. But if God can speak through a donkey, maybe he can even speak through him as well. So let's turn to the final character, and the character I feel actually this story is all about. So what do we learn through this story? Well, we learn about the Lord, Yahweh, the one and only. And through Balaam's oracles, God tells us about his relationship with Israel, but he also tells us a great deal about himself. Look at those verses from the first oracle that we had read to us. Who can count the dust of Jacob? Who can number the fourth part of Israel? God had decided to bless these people abundantly. He told Abraham that your descendants would be as numerous as the dust in the desert or the grains of sand in the sea. And he hasn't changed that message. He is unstoppable. Verse 8. How can I curse those whom God has not cursed? And let me read some words from the second oracle as well. And I would encourage you to read the third one when you have time. So Rosie read the first bit. God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should change his mind. Does he not speak? Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and then not fulfill? I have received a command to bless. He has blessed and I cannot change it. He is unstoppable. No misfortune. So this is verse 21 of chapter 23. No misfortune is seen in Jacob. No misery is observed in Israel. The Lord their God is with them. The shout of their king is among them. God brought them out of Egypt. They had the strength of a wild ox. There is no sorcery against Jacob, no divination against Israel. It will now be said of Jacob and of Israel, see what God has done. You see, God is unstoppable. He is consistent. He is also imminent. Look in verse 21. The Lord their God is with them, and he blesses them abundantly. The blessings that he made to Abraham are the same blessings that he is carrying out now. So what can we learn from this strange episode up in the hills in Numbers? Well, it is, as Rosie told us earlier, the people in the tents of Israel, they had no idea that this was going on. They were in their tents, going about their daily lives, maybe wondering if God was still going to keep his promises. And yet up in the hills, a supernatural battle was going on. I mean, actually, it wasn't really a battle. There was no contest. But God was carrying out his promises. And he can be trusted to do so. It made me think immediately of that line that we're going to sing in the next song. Even when I don't see it, you're working. Even when I don't feel it, you're working. Waymaker, promise keeper, that is who you are. And if that is their God, that is our God. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And if we're losing hearts, if we're feeling anxious that God has maybe forgotten us or given up on his promises, then let us remember now that he never stops working. Even when I don't see it, you're working. Even when I don't feel it, you're working. Because God is the same, and he is our God yesterday, today, and forever. Amen.